Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, though, we're bringing in a local product, playing for the St. Louis Cardinals, played Little League, played Elkins, played at TCU, and now with the St. Louis Cardinals, three-time All-Star. And get this, all right? Here is a little-known stat. The greatest hitter with 42 at-bat or more at-bats with the bases loaded in the history of Major
Better
League
Baseball.
Better
than Yuli?
In the history of Major League Baseball is Matt Carpenter.
How's that a real thing with 490, a pitcher?
He's 491. He's hit 491 with a 12-14 OPS. And he's joining us right now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate it. So let me ask you this, because situations are different. You've played in a World Series. It's different than playing on a Tuesday in Seattle. You walk up with nobody on and nobody out in the second inning, or you walk up with the bases loaded, and it's just different. What is it like when you're going, because you're really, really good at it. Why are you really good, and is your focus different when the bases are loaded?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, for me, it's certainly a little bit of a higher level of focus when the bases are loaded. One thing that, you know, I've kind of always kind of hung my hat on was my ability to swing at strikes. My plate discipline is kind of really what's paved the way for me to my big league career, and there's really no better scenario for that to kind of play out other than with the bases loaded. You know, all the pressure's on the pitcher, doesn't want to walk, you got to come to the plate, you know, got to make an execution, you know, execute a pitch. And my mentality in that situation has always been, look, man, this guy's in a bad spot, you know, there's really no pressure on me here. I can go up here, really be patient, get something I can handle, and try to put a good swing on it. And, you know, that's kind of been the recipe that's worked for me. I've had a lot of success in that moment and, you know, just pretty much with that same mentality.
Well, not only that, but you're a fly ball hitter. You hit a fly ball with the bases loaded, you get an RBI and no at bat. If you hit a fly ball with nobody on, it's an out. Right?
That's right. That's exactly right. So, I mean, it suits up well for my kind of the kind of hitter that I am. You know, I don't hit into double plays. I rarely hit the ball on the ground. You know, line drives and fly balls is kind of my MO. And so, you know, a lot of those at-bats have been, you know, bases loaded less than two outs, which is just, you know. I mean, I honestly, I think if I had to put a baseball scenario, you know, a situation for me that I enjoy the most, I would say it's bases loaded less than two outs. Where sac fly is the worst possible scenario. I feel like I could do that, you know, in my sleep. You know, just get a fly ball to the outfield.
Matt, do you change your get into a lot of baseball like specific conversation, but do you change your swing and your approach up in terms of you talked about being patient, but at the same time, and you want to have plate discipline, but at the same time, do you alter your swing at all when it comes to, are you looking for more lift? Is there anything that you do to change your approach with bases loaded? And I'm just saying this because John mentioned your ability with bases loaded. I mean, that's impressive because we've seen one of the best ever here with Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah, no, he's a good one. You know, for me, I like to, you know, my dad's a baseball coach. He was my coach growing up down in Houston. I like to pride myself in just being able to play the game. And to be able to play the game, for me, the game dictates kind of what I'm going to do. The scoreboard, the game. If the game calls for, you know, a ground ball, if you got runner on third, less than two outs, and the infield's playing back, and a ground ball to short scores a run, I like to pride myself in my ability to do that. And then, you know, to your point, if it's bases loaded one out, and a fly ball to the outfield scores the run, then certainly, yeah, I'm going to do my best to adjust my swing to accommodate, you know, the best case result that our team needs. So, you know, there's certainly a part of an element of that of, like, getting your pitch and adjusting your swing accordingly to the situation that presents itself.
Matt Carpenter, Cardinal, three-time All-Star. Matt, what do you make of the guys opting out of the All-Star game? Does this open up a can of worms?
I think it could. I mean, there's certainly a lot of theories out there of why guys are doing what they're doing. I mean, you know, there's talk of the, you know, CBA. There's talk of, a number of different reasons of potentially why they did it and why guys are doing it. But, you know, hey, look, at the end of the day, everybody's got their own decision on whether they want to play in that game or not. I think this year, more than ever, with the extensive protocols that Major League players have had to go through the last two seasons, you know, when you get an opportunity for 5 days off away from that and some time with your family, sometimes the grass is a little greener on that side than it is going and playing a game when you have that time off. So, I mean, who knows what decision each guy individually did, but, you know, it's hard to blame them, whatever it is.
Some of it might be, you know what, Orbit got booed last night. He's the Astros mascot. He got booed last night mercilessly. There are no Astros players there. Some of it might have been, you know what, I don't feel like putting up with all that BS. Here's a quote from Chris Bassett, the A's pitcher. I think this is about the Astros scandal. I think it's a bigger media story than player story. It wasn't just the Astros, so it is what it is. Obviously, I have teammates who played with them. I know how good of people those guys are. They were stuck in a bad situation, so yeah, I think it's a massive media thing. But from a player standpoint, I think a lot of people are kind of over it. What's your take on that?
You know what? I totally agree. Here's been my take the entire time. I feel like, you know, the Astros were pointed out and kind of almost like a witch hunt. There was an issue going on across Major League Baseball. They certainly weren't the only team doing something of that sort. It was a pretty widespread epidemic across the league, similar to what we're dealing with now with the sticky stuff. I think that, you know, the Astros just kind of fell on the cross, so to speak, for everybody. I can only speak in terms of the team I've played for. To my knowledge, that I have yet to be a part of anything like that. We just weren't doing it. And to be honest, we're probably stuck behind the times a little bit because it seems like there was a lot of clubs doing it. Specifically that year, the 2017, 2018, kind of during that time frame. So, you know, to say that the Houston Astros were the only team in Major League Baseball doing something to that extent is just, I think, completely false. And they had to, you know, wear the brunt of the decision that was made. And, I don't think it was very fair. And you know, I know a lot of those guys personally. Jose Altuve is a friend, a guy that I have a ton of respect for. And I believe everything that has come out about him, even in during that deal, you know, his teammates said, look, this is a guy who never even wanted to know what was coming. I believe that 100%. I mean, based off of who I know he is and the kind of hitter he is, to me, that's just my opinion on it, you know, for what it's worth. But, you know, it's an unfortunate thing for the entire game, Major League Baseball, everybody's always looking for something. And guys look for it, you know, it comes out as cheating. But when you're in the moment, you know, guys are thinking, you know, I'm just looking for an advantage. And, again, back to my original point, they weren't the only team doing that.
Yeah. Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, the guys who benefit, we know the guys that benefited the most from it, Marwin Gonzalez, Tyler White, Jake Mariznick, those guys kind of went by the wayside since all of it. You know who's really hitting well? Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa. You know what good hitters are going to do? Good hitters are going to hit, aren't they, Matt?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, look, you know, this is, you know, I can almost compare this to like steroids. I mean, steroids are going to take a guy who's a fringy major leaguer and they're going to make him an average to above average major leaguer. And if you've got, you know, an average big leaguer, and he takes steroids, he's going to become above average, and so on and so forth. You take above average big leaguers, they're going to become elite if they're taking some kind of steroids. Well, I mean, listen, 90% of the Houston Astros roster are guys who can really hit. I mean, to think that, you know, stealing signs was credit for the kind of players they are, then you're just not paying attention to the game. These guys are really good players, and they're going to hit regardless of whether they know what was coming. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all that those guys are having good years. They're really good players, and, you know, they're going to continue to hit for the remainder of their career.
I think it diminishes the act of hitting if you just assume that that anybody who gets any signs and people, you know, it's I'm going to ask you this because you're a player, but, you know, when you think about it, there's like players and catchers can change signs, pitchers can change signs throughout the game. The ability to see the sign, relay it to a teammate, and then a teammate bangs on the trash can to relay it to the hitter, and all this has to happen after a player gets set and then is going to deliver a pitch in 2 seconds. I mean, the turnaround on that is so fast that really is not going to be as efficient as people think. But I'm curious about your thoughts about if you had that, if you knew you had that and the pitcher had spider tack on his side, who's got the bigger advantage in that moment and also over the course of a season?
Oh, man, what a question. I tell you, you talk about a can of worms, you get into the debate on, you know, who's cheating more between pitchers and hitters. We could go on this for hours. I, you know, look, this is a conversation that gets talked about in clubhouses every day, especially right now during this time. I mean, I feel like Major League Baseball has done a good job of, you know, policing this. Maybe the way it has been handled and the way it's gone, probably maybe not the best ideal. I mean, throwing something together in the middle of a season like this and having these umpires kind of wear the brunt of, you know, playing, you know, hall monitor out there. I'm not sure that that's the best way, but their hands were tied and there's not much that they could do. So, but all that being said, you know, it's made a big difference. The way that pitchers were able to manipulate this ball with the foreign substance was, I mean, it was pretty substantial. I mean, the stuff that was going on. So, you know, that's obviously a huge advantage. And then you got, you know, to your question, If I know what's coming and a pitcher's got some stuff on the ball, it's still going to be pretty hard to hit. I mean, those guys, you know, being able to cut and sink a pitch 98 to 100 miles an hour and it moving really at a rate that kind of defies, you know, logic, it can make it challenging. And that's kind of, you know, my whole deal. There have been times where I'm facing a guy in the major leagues and he holds his glove a certain way, and he tips to his pitches to the hitter. You know, he's got a big glove on a changeup, or, you know, his forearm twitches when he grabs a curveball. I mean, there's guys out there like that. And I've had plenty of at-bats where I've picked up on something like that, knew something was coming, and hit a ground ball right to the first baseman. So, I mean, hitting in the major leagues is hard, regardless of whether you know what's coming or not. And if, you know, a pitcher's got something on his finger that's making his ball move a little bit more, it's going to make it even tougher.
Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5. It sounds to me like, as a guy growing up, you were an Astro fan. You still are. You're not all that bummed about it. You're in the last year of your deal. What about coming here to finish up your career?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I definitely grew up in, you know, the Houston area, right down the road in Sugar Land, which is where I believe AAA is now for the Stros. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in the, you know, Killer B era, Biggio, Bagwell, Bergman, you know, so a lot of summer nights spent at what was Enron Field. I think is it Minute Maid still?
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, that a lot of good memories. I played some high school playoff games there. So, you know, I would certainly welcome any opportunity to do that. You know, but kind of the old adage to baseball, we got to take it one day at a time. So I'm just kind of staying focused on our season and doing whatever I can for our club. But we'll see what happens.
You came in the league in 11, if I remember correctly. And you've been with one team for the duration. What's that in today, we're seeing that less and less. Can you talk about, we're hoping Carlos Correa sticks around, obviously, with the Astros. Can you talk about that ability to stay with one franchise? And you're with a franchise that has a history of doing things like that. Can you talk about what that means to you to be able to stick with one franchise? And have you ever been itchy to see, you know, what would it be like in another city or another franchise? Has that ever crossed your mind?
You know, to be completely honest, it hasn't crossed my mind a ton just because I'm so lucky and I've been so blessed to put on, you know, this Cardinal uniform for the, you know, the whole duration of my career. You know, it's funny, you know, growing up in Houston as an Astros fan, you know, the Astros have gotten their hearts broken by the Cardinals a few times in their history, you know, more than once. And, you know, a guy named Albert Pujols made things a little tough on us as a fan.
So you were a fan watching Pujols go yard, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It was the worst.
I mean that was a tough one to swallow. So, I mean, when my name was called, you know, from the draft in 2009 by St. Louis, I mean, the amount of emotions that were going through me, both excitement and also kind of, you know, man, this is a team that I obviously did not root for growing up. But it was a, you know, special day. And then what turned out to be something that, you know, St. Louis is home for me now. You know, we've raised a family, my wife and, you know, my wife and I were married, you know, we've had two kids, we've raised our kids in that town. You know, our fan base has been nothing but amazing, playing and putting that uniform on, the history, you know, that Busch Stadium and all the greats that have played, you know, it's just been a really special thing. And to be able to wear that one uniform for this long, it's something that I'm very proud of and something I don't take lightly, and just really respectful of everything and all the opportunities that I've had. And, you know, would hate to see it come to an end, and, you know, but obviously that always happens one day. You know, you're going to take the jersey off at some point, but it's been a really fun ride.
Yeah, you know, 11 seasons in St. Louis. We'll see what happens after this. We got a question here from a listener. Whose salsa is better, yours or Bregman's?
That's a great question. I've seen Alex's, post, and I know he's got that thing rolling. I've yet to try it. You know, but I'm obviously a little biased. I think mine's pretty good. I'm actually at my ranch in Texas spending the All-Star break, and the garden is alive and well, so I might fire up some this evening.
You might fire fresh up salsa. Some salsa fresh this salsa. Evening.
Yeah,
fresh salsa.
Are you fire roasting the tomatoes, or are we just keeping them? Or are we just keeping them as is?
You know, I do both. I've got one recipe, and I just make it two different ways. Sometimes I'll, you know, straight out of the garden, fresh, or sometimes we'll take the vegetables out, throw them on the smoker, give them that kind of mesquite flavor. We'll make it that way. And then sometimes I just throw them on a grill and kind of give the fire roasted. So it's like three different flavors, three different tastes, but the same exact recipe.
Yeah. See, what I like to do.
No, it's a bigger accomplishment. See, Lance always likes to tell people how he cooks his stuff.
That's the thing. That's the thing I do, Matt. That's the thing on the show.
So, Matt, bigger accomplishment. You having the card beaten Stan Musial for the Cardinals record for most doubles in a season, or you and Chad Huffman being the only people in history to play on the same little league team, high school team, college team, and major league team?
Golly, I mean, that's a tough one. Those both mean a lot to me. I think for the sake of honoring the late, great Stan Musial and getting booed from all Cardinal fans that have ever watched, if I don't answer it this way, I'd have to say that one. But the you know, playing at every level with Chad is something that, you know, both of us hold dear to our heart. It's pretty special. I mean, to grow up, you know, best friends with a guy and to hit literally every single level and then, you know, put on the same major league uniform one day. I mean, like you said, we don't know for sure. Because, I mean, I don't know if they track stats like that from years ago, but I'd just be shocked if anybody's ever done that.
Speaking of Stan Musial, do you remember when Musial's, it was either his daughter or son or son-in-law, wrote a strongly worded letter to the station and to me because I took shots at Tony La Russa and, of course, Albert Pujols. Not took shots, I just said he made me want to vomit blood in the driveway every time he hit a home run because the Astros continued to pitch to him for some unknown reason. But I think I went after Tony La Russa, and they were just, they were taken aback.
Yeah, nobody loved that. What did you learn from Lance Berkman the year you played with him?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we don't have enough time on the show to talk about all the stuff that that guy taught me. I mean, Lance, I've said this before, you know, to anybody really who will listen, that Lance is one of the best teammates, best friends, funniest guys, smartest guys, and one of the best baseball guys I've ever been around. I mean, I am – he's just an impressive human being, and he's just one of those guys that's going to leave a lasting mark with you no matter, you know, how much time you spend with them. This a couple off seasons ago, right before the pandemic hit, he came up and spent about a week up here in North Texas at my ranch, and we just sat around all day in the afternoon hitting in the cage and spent the evening sitting around a campfire, him telling stories of the good old days. And you can imagine, for a guy like me who grew up watching this kid, this guy play, to have that experience was pretty special. So I've got countless amount. I mean, this is a guy. I mean, not many guys get to have a, you know, childhood hero become a friend, and you know he's on that list for me. And so the amount of stuff he's taught me, both on and off the field, is endless.
Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5. Yadi Molina, we had this conversation earlier, the first ballot Hall of Famer. What's your favorite? And he is, right, he is the your guys' clubhouse leader. He is the guy that you guys all look to. What's your favorite Yadi Molina stat?
Jeez. I mean, that is a tough one. You know, I think that – I'll just tell you a quick story about him. I mean, this guy – is as tough as in mentally strong and just as competitive as any person I've ever been around. I mean, he's literally, they could do a, you know, a Save the Last Dance type of documentary about Yadier Molina. That's the kind of guy he is.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I mean, he makes everybody around him better. He's one of those guys that just sees the field differently. You know, you've heard this term. You know, somebody's made this analogy before. It's like, you know, you got a guy, you got a group of people on the field all playing checkers, and one guy's playing chess, and that's him. I mean, he is just on another level. He sees the game at a different speed, and just is able to process and analyze the game just differently. And you know, that comes from years of hard work and practice. But you know, you got to think about it. He's the youngest of three brothers that all. You know, all three of them played Major League Baseball catcher on World Series, you know, championship teams. So the DNA that this guy, I mean, he's just built for it. He's just special. And so, you know, I got a blue million stories about him, but, you know, he just, you know, I can't even, I could tell you a million different ones, but I'll just say that, you know, I'll just leave it at, man, this guy, He's just on another level when it comes to playing, and one of my favorite teammates and a guy that you just want to go to war with.
Yeah. And if you got to look up Yadi Molina, if you don't, he's a first ballot. That dude is a first ballot Hall of Fame. And I don't think he gets that kind of love. I don't, you know, maybe, I don't know why, but, you know, when we talk about the guys that are sure things, Yadi is as sure as anybody right now in the game.
He is for sure. So I'll give you one quick story. This is one of my favorite things that he does. He's done this numerous times. So he's calling a game, and you know he's getting to a big spot, and he's calling whatever. And if the pitcher shakes, you know he'll calmly kind of shake his head like, hey, stay with me here, and give the same sign again. Pitcher shakes, and he'll try it one more time, and if he shakes again. Then he's like, all right, throw it. And the guy throws whatever. Well, for the rest of the inning, I've seen him, because he's upset with the guy that didn't listen to him. Guy gets a base hit, scores a run, whatever. He's upset with the guy. He just gives him the, like, all right, big boy, go ahead, throw what you want. Doesn't put a sign down, catches every pitch, doesn't know what's coming.
And that,
I mean,
ain't
never
easy.
These guys are throwing, 100 mile an hour with breaking stuff. I mean, I could barely hit it. And he's catching it and doesn't know what's coming.
That's hard. You see how catchers act when they get crossed up.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
I've seen him do it. I mean, I don't have enough fingers on my hand to count the times I've seen the guy do it. And it's pretty pretty impressive to watch.
Well, you need to catch because that's the only position that you haven't played yet.
And I tell you what, he's going to have to retire because he never takes a day off either.
You got to tell him, in a, you know, in a 9-run game in the ninth inning, hey, Yachty, let me go. Let me in. Let me go catch.
That would be, I mean, I'll try. I'm going to do my best. That's the one I'm kind of afraid of, I'll be honest.
And what's your ERA as a pitcher?
It's a zero.
Zero.
I got one scoreless inning.
What? Yeah, that's all I care about.
That's it. That's it. One scoreless inning. And how you were humping it up at what, 80, 90?
Oh, I don't think I've ever touched 80 or 90 across the diamond. I was probably sitting 40 to 55.
You just lobbed it up there.
As slow as I could go. I mean, I've hit off pitchers before or hitters before. When a position player is on the mound, there's two things I notice. If the guy throws hard, he gets smashed. But if you throw it as slow as you can, it almost always works.
Yeah, always, always. And you got a zero ERA on top of everything else. Well, man, we appreciate it. Thanks for hanging with us. Your insight is great, and thanks for being here. Best of luck. Have fun. I know you're playing golf today. Have fun with your dad. That is just great stuff, and hopefully we'll run into you and get you on the show again.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me. Y'all enjoy the rest of the week.
All right. There's Matt Carpenter, Elkins High School, here on ESPN 97.5. Just a great guy, you guys. And I know, listen, I know he's not. Somebody said, hey, he's hitting 180. Listen, you know where he was at the beginning of the season? Last year was weird with the COVID, and this year he got off to a slow start. But that dude can rake. That dude can rake. So, and he, you know what? He doesn't even, if the Astros picked him up, he could be your Aledmys Diaz next year. He can play every position.
We got an Aledmys Diaz.
No, we don't. He's never here.
Oh, we've got ghost of Aledmys Diaz.
Right. We've got his ghost here.
No, we've got Aledmys. I saw a video. Oh. We got to break it. We got a break coming up.
Yeah, no, we got. We missed a break.
A sporty one.
Oh, well.